VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports Ukraine's top military commander says his forces now control nearly 400 square miles of a Russian region after a lightning incursion that has embarrassed Moscow.
International security expert Dr.
Ukraine's top military commander says his forces now control nearly 400 square miles of a Russian region after a lightning incursion that has embarrassed Moscow. The remarks during a briefing for President Volodymyr Zelensky marked the first time a Ukrainian military official publicly commented on gains in the Kursk region. Russian forces are still scrambling to respond to the stunning attack that started last week, the biggest on their soil since World War II. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Germany, France, and Britain on Monday called for a Gaza ceasefire as Israel braces for a large-scale attack. The urgent push for a truce comes amid fears of a wider regional conflict with Iran and its proxies as ceasefire talks are set to resume later in the week.
These are being called sort of last-ditch talks that, you know, if they don't get an agreement soon, there won't be an agreement. But again, that's a lot of posturing. Originally, I think the thought was that Iran would hold off until after these talks to see if anything was going to come out of it. And that, for some reason, has changed.
VOA's Linda Gradstein in Jerusalem joining VOA's Flashpoint Monday. A suspected attack by Yemen's Houthi rebels targeted a ship in the southern reaches of the Red Sea early Tuesday, according to officials. It is the latest in their campaign of assaults over the Israel-Hamas war. The attack comes as Yemen's main sponsor, Iran, weighs a possible retaliatory attack against Israel. This is VOA News. AP correspondent Norman Hall reports FBI says it is investigating after the Trump campaign said sensitive documents were hacked by Iran.
The FBI has confirmed that it's investigating allegations that sensitive documents from the Trump campaign were stolen in a cyber intrusion days after the campaign declared it had been hacked by Iran. The campaign provided no specific evidence of Iran's involvement, but the claim came shortly after Microsoft issued a report detailing foreign agents' attempts to interfere in the U.S. campaign in 2024. The report cited an instance of an Iranian military intelligence unit in June sending a spear phishing email to a high-ranking official of a presidential campaign from a compromised email account of a former senior advisor. Iran's mission to the United Nations denied being involved. I'm Norman Hall.
Donald Trump recounted his assassination attempt in vivid detail and promised the largest deportation in U.S. history during a high-profile return to the social media platform formerly known as Twitter. The conversation with X's owner Elon Musk was plagued by technical glitches. The rare public conversation, which was overwhelmingly friendly, revealed little new about Trump's plans for a second term. Musk, a former Trump critic, said that the Republican nominee's toughness, as demonstrated by his reaction to last month's shooting, was critical for national security. Trump said, "I need an Elon Musk. I need somebody that has a lot of strength and courage and smarts." Talks to end Sudan's 16-month war between the army and the paramilitary rapid support forces will move forward this week. The U.S. special envoy said, despite little sign from either party, the trying a peaceful resolution.
We would have preferred for these talks to start in April when we tried. We began trying for this round, if not April, May, if not May, June, then July. But we will move forward with this week.
U.S. Special Envoy Dan Tom Perriello in Geneva on Monday. The Sudanese army has all but rejected the invitation, while the RSF has continued its costly offensives in parts of the country despite welcoming the U.S. and Saudi initiative. Failure of efforts to bring the war to an end would exacerbate a conflict that has created the world's largest humanitarian crisis, pushing 10 million people out of their homes and creating famine-like conditions across the country. The pilot of the plane that crashed down in Brazil last week has been buried in Sao Paulo, becoming the first person laid to rest among the 62 victims as authorities continue working to determine what caused the accident. A hearse bearing the casket of Danilo Santos Romano rolled through the streets of Penha, the working-class region of Sao Paulo's east side. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News. We'll be right back.
program. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, August 13th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Several senior officials of Tanzania's main opposition Chadema party were in jail as of late Monday night.
We are now approaching the national local government election this year in November. So the ruling party is in a panic mode. They have decided again to start using the police.
Nigeria holds a youth summit on national security after protests. Conservationists say large tusk elephants on the Kenya-Tanzania border are in danger. Former Zambian President Edgar Charles Lungu demands the immediate release of the leader of the opposition Socialist Party. Rights groups called on SADC leaders to condemn human rights violations in Zimbabwe when they meet there this weekend.
I think that SADC should use the August summit, and importantly, President Mnangagwa, who is going to assume the chairmanship of that regional bloc, as an opportunity to encourage Zimbabwe to put in place key reforms to improve human rights, democracy, rule of law.
And Kamala Harris talks about immigration and leans into her record as prosecutor, while Donald Trump promises mass deportations. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. In Tanzania, several senior officials of the main opposition Chadema party were in jail as of late Monday night. They include National Chairman Freeman Mbowe and Deputy Chairman Tundu Lissu. They were detained on their way to World Youth Day celebrations organized by the party's Youth Council. A Tanzanian government spokesperson did not respond to our request for an interview, but the police said they banned the event because it posed a threat to peace and could lead to unrest. John Unrema is Chadema's Director of Protocol, Communications and Foreign Affairs. He tells me that Tanzanians do not want to return to what human rights groups called the dark days under late Tanzanian leader John Magufuli.
Today is a youth international day, and our youth wing, every year they do organize an event, some kind of a symposium. Yesterday, the police issued a statement that Chadema youths are not allowed to organize such a symposium this year. And when the police issued that statement, the youth were already moving from their hometown to their region, which is in the northern highland of the country. And when the youth were moving, the police started to arrest them in various parts of the country. More than 400 plus youths were arrested. And yesterday evening, the vice chairman of the party, Honorable Tundu Lissu, and the secretary general of the party, John Mnyika, they flew to Mbeya yesterday evening, and they held a meeting in our party offices in Nyasa region. And when they were in the meeting receiving briefing from the organizers of this event, the police surrounded the building and arrested all members who were inside that office. So they detained them until this moment. As we speak, we don't know where are they. We have sent our lawyers in that particular region to go and look after them, but we haven't seen them. And as you know, Honorable Tundu Lissu is a person who lives with medication every day.
The police said that the Youth Day meeting had some signs of threatening public peace.
I'm saying the police have a fear of unknown because they are quoting one of the youth organizers that he was telling other youth that Kenyan youth are more organized and liberated compared to Tanzanians. So it is better for the Tanzanian youth to get together, to talk together, and get a way of organizing themselves. So the police, they are using that as an excuse.
Did you also say that your national chairman, Freeman Mbowe, has been arrested?
Honorable Freeman Mbowe, the party leader, decided to fly to Mbeya so that he can meet with the police authorities and discuss what is the matter and where about the vice chairman to the issue and joining the Secretary General. But immediately when he arrived at the Songwe Airport, he was immediately arrested while in the VIP room. And then until as we speak right now, he is in police custody in their region. His lawyers have been denied the access because his mobile phones are confiscated. No information is getting out.
I thought there has been some improvement in the political climate, particularly since President Samia Suluhu came to power. What is happening now?
This new new developments, like I just said, that it is because we are now approaching the national local government election this year in November. So the ruling party is in a panic mode. They have decided again to start using the police. We've issued a statement today that we should not allow our country to go back to the Magufuli time.
John Grayman is the Director of Communication, Foreign Affairs and Protocols for Tanzania's main opposition Chadema Party. He was speaking with us from Dar es Salaam. Zambia's former President Edgar Chagwa Lungu is demanding the immediate release of Fred Mbembe, the leader of the opposition Socialist Party. Mbembe, a former journalist, was recently arrested by the police and charged with seditious practice for publishing an article entitled Tshisekedi tells DRC Catholic bishops about the $20 million payout to by Zambia silence on the social media network X, formerly Twitter. Frank Bualia is the Director General of the Governor UPND's Presidential Campaign Media Support Program. He tells VOA's Peter Clotilde that the police must be allowed to carry out their constitutional duties without intimidation or harassment.
The former president is a lawyer. I'm not a lawyer. But what I understand is that when somebody allegedly commits an offense and they are arrested by the police, they will only be released unconditionally if the police find information or establish information to the effect that the person they have arrested has no prima facie case to face. Therefore, they will be released. But if the police have done a thorough investigation and want to charge that person and bring them before a competent court of law, as we have been informed in this particular case, then they will not release the person who has been arrested unconditionally. This is what the police have told the Zambian public, that they will bring him to court, that they should not be kept by the police for unnecessarily too long.
President Lungu is arguing in his call that the opposition leader should be released immediately because the sedition charge that he faces is bondable and that this is an abuse of the process by the police and by extension the government. Your response to that?
What we know is that the police are fully in charge of what is happening concerning this particular case, and that the politicians cannot dictate to them. They are doing their job. Our prayer is that they should be able to bring him to a court as quickly as possible, and if he fulfills bond conditions or bail conditions, he will be released.
What do you say to critics who are saying that the UPND is using the state institutions, including the police and the judiciary, to go after perceived political opponents or political enemies in Zambia?
Whoever says that should equally say those in the opposition are breaking the law in a notorious manner so that the police can come after them and thereafter claim that they are being persecuted. Why are the police not arresting me? Why are the police not arresting Winter Kavimba, Hari Kalava, and many others in this country, including those who have divergent views and are very critical of the current administration? Why are the police not going after them? It's because they have not done anything wrong. Whereas those who are in the habit of making inflammatory statements or indeed doing anything that amounts to breaking the law, the law will visit them. It will be blind to who you are.
Frank Bualia is the Director General of the Governor UPND's Presidential Campaign Media Support Program. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotte. Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch are calling on Zimbabwe's government to stop the arbitrary arrest and detention of opposition and civil society members ahead of this weekend's Southern African Development Community SADC Summit in Harare. Zimbabwe Information Minister Jennifer Muswiri told VOA via WhatsApp that the allegations are hogwash. Idris Ali Nasser is a senior Africa researcher for Human Rights Watch. He tells me that SADC leaders should condemn the government's human rights violations and demand the release of all those unjustly arrested.
What we are saying is that the SADC summit cannot be used as reason to dismantle fundamental and basic freedoms and human rights that are protected under international law. And we've seen this happen the last couple of days, where it's the latest example of the escalation of the violations against the civilian population in Zimbabwe, throwing a very wide dragnet of jailing perceived critics, jailing and targeting innocent civilians, harassing families of those that are perceived to be critics of the government.
So you were saying that more than 160 people were arrested since mid-June. I spoke with the Zimbabwe Minister of Information. Of course, he refused an official on-the-record interview, but he said to me that in a message on WhatsApp that your allegations are a hogwash. And he also said that the government did not suspend law and order, and that criminals will always be arrested. In other words, the government is abiding by the rule of law.
It's unfortunate that that is what is coming out of the authorities in Zimbabwe, but the facts speak for themselves. For example, on June 16, the Zimbabwe Republic Police raided a private home in a suburb of Harare and arrested over 70 people, most of them young, in what was an attack on the right to peaceful assembly and the freedom of association. Many of these 70 people, according to their lawyers, and this has been articulated in court, were assaulted, were beaten up, were tortured. Some of them have showed up in court with broken limbs. This is a fact, and since June 16th, several times, they've been denied bail.
Idris, what would you like for SADC to do then?
So we are saying that SADC should use the August summit, and importantly, President Mnangagwa, who's going to assume the chairmanship of that regional bloc, as an opportunity to encourage Zimbabwe to put in place key reforms to improve human rights, democracy, rule of law. And we are also saying that SADC should speak out against this intensified crackdown against the opposition, against civil society members, against families, against the civilian population. We have seen in the last few days, for example, the rolling out of military tanks onto the streets of Harare and into the townships in a clear act of intimidation of the civilian population. And it's quite unfortunate that the SADC bloc has not said anything about it. And I think it is imperative for SADC to say something publicly about these human rights violations. SADC needs to take a clear stand against the crackdown. They also need to push on Zimbabwe and demand an immediate and unconditional release of everybody who's been arbitrarily detained simply for exercising their constitutional rights.
Idris Ali Nasser is a senior Africa researcher at Human Rights Watch. He was speaking with me from Lusaka, Zambia. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, August 13. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The United Nations and Nigerian police authorities on Monday held a police youth summit in the capital to commemorate International Youth Day and discuss the role of youth in national security intelligence. The summit comes days after Nigerian young people led nationwide protests calling for a reversal of government policies that they say cause severe hardships. Timothy Obiesu reports from Abuja.
More than 400 delegates, including government officials, security agencies, and youth representatives, cheered as the Nigerian police chief, Kayode Egbetokun, took the stage of the Nigeria Police Youth Summit, the one-day event with the theme Enhancing the Nigerian Youth's Value for National Security Intelligence. Is a partnership between the police and UNESCO and part of the International Youth Day commemoration. Authorities said the summit was designed to examine the role of youths in national security matters and create room to enhance youth participation. Egbetokun addressed the participants.
Let us remain steadfast in our commitment to our youth. Together, we must pledge to support, empower, and create a brighter future for all. The task before us is indeed significant, but I am confident that with the collective strength, creativity, and enthusiasm of our youth, coupled with the support of our partners, we will rise up to the challenge and make a meaningful impact.
The summit featured interactive sessions between the police and youth on crime prevention, conflict resolution, social media, and community engagement. The summit follows recent protests in several cities by mostly young people over the spiraling cost of living. The so-called 10 Days of Rage protests began on August the 1st. Protesters blamed Nigeria's worsening economic situation on government policies, including the scrapping of fuel subsidies introduced last year. At the summit, police authorities said while the protesters may have had good intentions, the protests gave rise to criminal elements with ulterior motives. Prince Abdusalami Ladibolu is the president of UNESCO's Read and Earn Federation. He says Nigeria's youth are a valuable asset.
Our focus today is on youth recognizing their role as change agents. It is imperative that our young people understand their potentials to influence and drive positive change.
The protests ebbed earlier than scheduled due to security crackdowns, but Amnesty International says at least 22 protesters were killed, mostly in northern Nigeria. On Saturday, Nigeria's Minister of Industry, Trade and Investment, Doris Nkiruka, said the country lost about $325 million per day during the protests. Olarewaju Fagbohun is a former professor and the co-founder of Rook and Company Law Firm. He delivered a keynote address during the summit.
There's a trust gap in terms of security agencies and the youth. When that protest was brewing and when it eventually happened, there were two forces in play. There were those with genuine grievances who wanted the nation to listen to them. And there were those who had mischievous purposes. And that is why this kind of conversation is very important.
Authorities at the summit pledged to improve youth participation in national security matters. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Scientists and conservationists in Kenya are sounding the alarm over the killing of elephants with large tusks. According to scientists, they were killed by trophy hunters in Tanzania. They say other elephants in the group are in danger if they cross into Tanzania where hunting is allowed. Victoria Amuga reports from Nairobi.
In news briefing Monday, conservationists and scientists said five large tusked elephants were targeted and killed in the last 8 months by trophy hunters in northern Tanzania. They added that only 10 of the elephants with tusks weighing 45 kilograms, an equivalent of 100 pounds each, remain in Kenya's Amboseli National Park, which has the highest density of the animals. Conservationist Paula Kahumbu is the chief executive officer at Wildlife Direct.
This is bigger than Kenya. This is bigger than Tanzania. It's actually a global issue. Why? Because elephants cannot speak for themselves. We, as people of the world, have to speak for these elephants. They cannot go to court. They cannot go to the East African court.
In March, Tanzanian authorities issued controversial hunting permits for the large tusked elephants known as super tuskers in the Greater Amboseli West Kilimanjaro border area. Festus Iwangi, a research scientist for conservation group Save the Elephants, called on Kenya to raise the issue with Tanzania.
Tanzania is a sovereign state. They do have their hunting policy. They may not have to overhaul it in Israel, but for the interest of the cross-border conservation initiatives, it would be very good if our president engaged the counterpart in Tanzania and we come up with an arrangement whereby no more hunting blocks or hunting ranges are allowed within the defined range.
To mark the August 12th World Elephant Day, the group of scientists say they have handed the Tanzanian government a global petition with over 500,000 signatures calling for an end to the trophy hunting along the country's border with Kenya in Tanzania's portion of the park. In a telephone interview, Conservation Commissioner Mabula Misungwi Nyanda of the Tanzania Wildlife Management Authority said the hunters are required to follow protocol. He says hunting depends on whether the procedure has been followed or not. If you found them, they would have explained whether they followed the procedure or not, but the animals should be protected as required. Kenya is home to over 2,000 different species of elephants. About 600 of them, conservationists say, cross over to Tanzania regularly. Kenya has banned elephant hunting for more than 4 decades. Authorities hope the campaign to stop hunting the super tuskers in Tanzania will help save the remaining elephant families. Victoria Amunga, VOA News, Nairobi.
Immigration is one of the top issues in the upcoming U.S. election. Vice President Kamala Harris is campaigning on her achievements as the prosecutor, while former President Donald Trump blasts the current administration's record and promises mass deportations of undocumented immigrants. VOA's immigration reporter Arlene Barrows has more.
On the campaign trail, Vice President Kamala Harris highlights her background as a prosecutor, district attorney, and California Attorney General.
I walked underground tunnels between the United States and Mexico on that border with law enforcement officers. I went after transnational gangs, drug cartels, and human traffickers that came into our country illegally. I prosecuted them in case after case, and I won.
While in office, former President Donald Trump built more than 80 kilometers of new border wall, reduced the annual cap on refugee admissions to historic lows, and enforced a policy that separated children from their parents.
This November, the American people are going to compare these records, and they're going to tell Border Czar Harris, you have done a horrible job. You're a disgrace to our country. You're fired. Get out of here. You're fired. Get out.
Immigration is a hot issue in this presidential election. A Chicago Council survey found that 50% of respondents say a large number of immigrants is a threat to the United States, though just over half of Americans support a border wall and the use of American troops at the U.S.-Mexico border. Most oppose mass deportation of undocumented immigrants. With Congress failing to pass immigration reform, the nation remains dependent on executive actions and regulations regardless of who is in office. Here's immigration lawyer Corey Foreman.
With the political environment we're in, it's a tough place because executive actions are always going to be the subjects of lawsuits, and we have a Congress that's not willing to act.
Harris pledges to support border security legislation, highlighting Trump's role in sinking a bipartisan Senate bill earlier this year.
He tanked the bipartisan deal because he thought it would help him win an election. Which goes to show Donald Trump does not care about border security. He only cares about himself. So here is my pledge to you. As president, I will bring back the border security bill that Donald Trump killed, and I will sign it into law.
Trump's Republican allies have urged him to focus on areas where they believe he has an advantage over Harris, especially on immigration. He continues to call for the deportation of undocumented migrants and criticizes the Biden-Harris administration for having what he calls an open border policy.
With your vote, inflation will stop. The illegal aliens will be turned back. They're not coming in. We got to stop them. Did you see where she's now saying, oh, we had a very good border. Oh, great. They had the worst border in the history of the world.
The U.S. Border Patrol logged about 130,000 migrant encounters in June, up from about 104,000 in the same month of 2019, Trump's last year before the pandemic, but down from the December 2023 peak of more than 300,000. Alina Barrows, VOA News, Washington.
That's it for this Tuesday, August 13th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your morning with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing that you will have an amazing Tuesday.